hiking and riding and cruising around in some of the strangest outfits I'd ever seen. Lots of face paint and costumes, ranging from leather capes to tutus. And music was everywhere, the separate melodies twisting together into a tight braid. Even the guys looked overwhelmed. Finally, Ian turned to smile at us. I say we do a big sweep, take it all in, and figure out where title track is playing. Sound good? He looked at me hopefully. What he was really saying was, let's distract Addie. Sounds great, I said, attempting to match the glimmer of hope in his voice. I'd been through a lot to get here. The least I could do was try to enjoy it. Even with the costumes and overcrowding, Electric Picnic started out fairly normal, with all the usual festival ingredients. Stages, food stands, 8 billion porta-potties, kids screaming on carnival rides, tarot card readers. But the longer we walked, the more I began to feel like I'd stepped into a carnival funhouse. The first truly strange sight we stumbled upon was the sunken bus. A bright red double-decker bus angled into the mud, its bottom half almost completely submerged in a ditch. Next was a human jukebox, an elevator-sized structure housing an entire band taking requests. Then a trio of college-age guys ran by, wearing muddy sumo wrestler costumes. Did that just happen? Rowan asked, watching them in disbelief. The one in the back wore a glittery tutu fastened around his waist. Did that? Ian asked as a man rode by on a bicycle made out of a piano. I feel like I just fell down a rabbit hole, I said, wishing it were enough to distract me from the phone buzzing in my pocket. The smell of cinnamon wafted over toward us, and Rowan sniffed the air. I'm starving. Whatever that is, I want it. Anyone else hungry? Me, I said, surprising myself. Normally when I was this upset, I had no appetite. But carnival food did sound good. Plus, my mom claimed that most of life's struggles could be cured with butter and sugar. I was willing to give it a try. You guys go ahead and eat, Ian offered, pulling his notebook out of his backpack. I'm going to try to find the stage title track we'll be performing on. See if I can get some pictures. Want me to get you something? I asked. Nah, meet you back here, Ian hollered, taking off, he and his man bun blending in with the herd of music lovers. Rowan and I wandered the food trucks, finally settling on a waffle truck that put my waffle attempts to shame. I ordered the Chocolate Cloud, a Belgian waffle drizzled with a mixture of white and dark chocolate, and Rowan ordered the Flying Pig, a combination involving bacon, caramel, and fluffy creme fraiche. Our order took a long time, and when it was finally ready, we posted up at a mostly empty picnic table and ate slowly, in a silence that I was grateful for. Most people would probably try to talk me out of how bad I was feeling, but not Rowan. He just sat next to me, occasionally offering me bites of bacon. By the time our plates were scraped clean, the day was starting to look worn out, the edges of the sky taking on a gold hue. I drummed my fingers on the table. Where is he? Ian? Rowan asked, licking some creme off his fingers. It's been a while. I thought he'd be back by now. I squinted into the crowd. The direction he'd gone in was dark and fairly empty, clearly not where title track stage would be. Probably lost track of time, Rowan said, leaning in. I don't know if you know this about your brother, but he gets pretty excited about things he's passionate about. A snort escaped my nose. Really? I hadn't noticed. His dimple appeared. There it is, Maeve. There what is? I assumed he was pointing out another weird costume, but when I looked up, he was studying me. Your laugh. He glanced down, fiddling with his napkin. Hey, Addie, I know what it's like to have the world fall down around you. He trailed off, and I clutched my fork, hoping he was about to say something like, your friends will suffer from collective amnesia and no one will even remember the photo. Or, I'm actually a time traveler come to save you from your past. but instead what he said was, "Today is a bad day, but it won't always be this bad. I promise." I nodded, my eyes fogging up. I knew he was right, of course. Bad things knocked people off their feet all the time, and they got back up and kept moving. But right now I had a mountain in front of me, plus a whole pocket full of texts, and I had no idea how I'd reach the summit. I shifted at the table, my eyes seconds away from giving the Irish rain a run for its money. But just then Rowan reached over, his hand as warm and comforting as it had been back at Inch Beach.
"And what you said back at the fairy ring,
about you and Ian standing next to me. That's true for you too. I know I can't fix this, but I am here for you." His eyes were earnest behind his glasses, and a pinpoint of calm suddenly dropped into my center, slowly rippling outward. Life could be so unexpected. I was supposed to be eating spaghetti in Italy, yet here I was, finishing up a waffle in the cold drizzle of Ireland, with a new friend I knew I could rely on. "Thanks, Rowan. That means a lot." Rowan broke eye contact, his hand leaving mine as he looked over my shoulder. "Ian's back." I stood up quickly, but before I could turn around, a hurricane of curly hair hit me so hard I almost fell over. "Lena!" I yelled, and in response she hugged me to the point of asphyxiation, my face planted in her lemon-scented curls. "Lena, I can't breathe," I managed. "Oops, sorry." She stumbled backward, and I laughed for no reason other than I was so relieved to see her, I almost couldn't stand it. "Lena, you look amazing," I said. She really did. Italy looked good on her. Her skin was a dark olive color, and instead of trying to tame her hair the way she always had, it fell loose around her face in bouncing, voluminous curls. Maybe it was the wild familiarity of her hair that got me, but suddenly I was blinking back tears. Please don't let me start crying within the first few seconds of seeing her. "I can't believe I'm here. What is this place? Back at the entrance, there were two guys running around inside a big, rolling plastic ball." Lena stepped back, catching sight of Rowan. "Are you Rowan?"
"That's me," Rowan said, shaking her hand. I waited for him to do the Lena stare. All guys did it. Between her hair and her big eyes, she was a lot to take in. But he just smiled politely and then glanced over at me. "I can see why you two are friends. You're both really good at making an entrance." She grinned and put her arm around me.
"We do our best."
Ian suddenly appeared, deep in conversation with a guy roughly Lena's height, a mess of dark curly hair crowning his face.
"Ian found us near the fairy woods," Lena explained.
"Wren?" I asked the curly-haired stranger. His nose was exceptionally Italian, and when he smiled, a small gap between his front teeth instantly put me at ease. Wren yanked me in for a hug.
"So nice to meet you. I've heard things."
I knew what he meant, but I still stiffened slightly. "Not those things," I instructed myself. He didn't mean the text messages or Cubby. But it was too late. Panic crept through my center, and suddenly my head spun. Telling Lena had been hypothetical for so long, and now the moment was here. Of course, Lena zeroed in on my uneasiness.
"Addie, are you okay?"
I'd better just tell her now. Get it over with. I swallowed nervously.
"Lena, can we talk in private?"
"I just found a title track museum in the woods," Ian interrupted, sidling up next to me. "I don't know who made it, but you guys have to see it." And before I could protest, he was suddenly dragging Lena and me in the direction he'd come from, Rowan and Wren trailing right behind. I tried to dig my heels in, but his momentum was too much.
"Ian, stop! I need to talk to Lena. I need to tell her about..."
I trailed off, hoping he'd take the hint. Instead, he sped up, taking us to a jog.
"Sorry, but this really can't wait. The concert starts in less than an hour."
Lena's curls were bouncing in time with our pace, and she wrenched her neck back to look at the guys. Everyone keeping up?
Ma certo, Ren answered affirmatively.
And that's when I realized that it wasn't just Ian pulling me along. It was Lena, too. She was just as intent on getting to the museum as Ian was.
What is going on? I demanded. Why are we all running?
Just trust us, Lena said, squeezing my arm.
And then all four of them looked at me with big Cheshire Cat smiles. This was officially getting weird. Ian finally stopped in a clearing underneath a canopy of decorated trees. Old CDs hung by strips of ribbon, swaying gently in the evening breeze, and fairy lights snaked around tree trunks and branches. A collection of candles sat flickering on an old tree stump that reminded me of the one in the fairy ring.
What is this? I asked, stopping in my tracks.
Sorry, Addie. I know you are really looking forward to a title track museum, but that's not what this is.
Ian grinned at me, then turned to Lena.
Did you bring the ceremonial garb?
Of course.
She unhooked her arm from mine and then dropped her overstuffed backpack to the ground, pulling out four long white pieces of fabric and tossing them to everyone. I stared as everyone began twisting the fabric into haphazard togas.
Are those sheets? What's going on?
Ian nodded his over his shoulder.
We're putting on our ceremonial garb.
What ceremony?
And this is for you.
Lena pulled a long, plum-colored shawl from the bottom of her bag and draped it carefully around me, pulling my ponytail out from under it. I grabbed the bottom edge and held it up to the light. Intricate mandalas swirled through the pattern.
Where have I seen this before?
It was my mom's. She wore it to all of her gallery nights. She said it made her feel royal.
My heart quickened.
Lena, this is special. You really want me to wear this?
No. I want you to keep it.
She straightened the shawl so it sat evenly on my shoulders, and I bit the inside of my cheek, holding back my protest. Every bit of me wanted to refuse the gift, but I couldn't. It was too meaningful.
Thank you, I said, my voice wobbly.
You're welcome. Now, let's go.
Attendant?
Lena gestured for Rowan, who quickly moved to my side, escorting me to the twinkling tree stump.
Rowan, will you tell me what's going on? I whispered. Did you know about this?
His dimple lit up in the twinkling lights.
Sorry, Maeve, but I was sworn to secrecy. What I can tell you is that this is not a title track museum.
Ian gestured to the stump.
Everyone grab a candle so Addie can stand up there.
His hair looked extra tangly, the hood of his sweatshirt poking out over the top of his toga. I shook my head quickly.
Oh no, we are not recreating oboe hair.
The stump was completely entrenched in lights, and even though we were on the edge of the grounds, plenty of festival goers still milled around us, a few already stopping to watch.
Relax. You don't have to say anything. We'll be the ones doing the talking. So climb up,
Ian said firmly.
Why?
He exhaled loudly.
Can you please not fight me for once? Please?
It was the extra please that got me. I climbed up and then turned to face my friends. They'd formed a half circle around me, their candles casting strange shadows on their faces. It looked like I was about to be initiated into a cult, or sacrificed.
What is going on?
They shared a conspiratorial grin. Then Ian nodded at Ren.
Okay, Master of Ceremonies, start us out.
Ren cleared his throat, and then let loose, his voice booming through the trees.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stradballas and Stradballies, we have before us a fair maiden.
Ren, don't improvise, Lena interrupted. Just go with the script, what we talked about.
Nessun problema.
He cleared his throat again.
On this fine summer day, there was a group of people who loved someone,
and wanted her to know they had her back. And so they held the first ceremony of Queen Maeve, here at Stradbally, in full view of many.
In full view of many was right. The crowd was growing by the second, no doubt hoping for a show. Wren gestured theatrically, raising his voice to the top of the trees.
And so, like Queen Maeve of old, we have put her in a high place and will honor her by building her up, one rock at a time.
Suddenly I noticed a pile of fist-sized rocks at their feet, and I realized what this was about. They were recreating Queen Maeve's growing tomb, the one Rowan had told me about back when he first dubbed me Maeve.
Wait a minute, whose idea was this? I asked.
Ian's, Lena said. Ian shook his head.
We all get some credit. Rowan gave you the nickname. I came up with the ceremony. Lena brought all the supplies, and Wren is master of ceremonies.
Ian called me right before we left for the airport, Lena filled in. I only had 15 minutes to prepare.
My mom helped, Wren added. She has a surprising number of fairy lights at her disposal.
This is... I bit my lower lip, not sure what to say. My eyes were already burning with tears.
So, what do I do? I managed.
Just stand there. Wren turned to Lena. You're up, Principessa.
Lena picked up the rock closest to her, stumbling on her toga as she stepped forward. A good friend is like a four-leaf clover. Hard to find. Lucky to have. She paused, weighing the rock in her hand. I didn't make that up. I saw it on a t-shirt at the airport. She turned slightly, addressing the group. For those of you who don't know, my mom died last year. Her illness was very sudden, and it took her much too fast. Her voice trembled, but she looked up, locking her eyes on mine and lowering her voice a bit. Remember right at the end, when my mom couldn't breathe on her own anymore, and they knew it was only going to be a few hours? I nodded. The memory was etched into my mind. I would never forget answering that phone call. Lena had been crying so hard that I couldn't understand her. All I knew was that I had to get to the hospital, fast. The old familiar clamp moved over my throat. Lena exhaled, making the flame on her candle jump. It was 4 in the morning, and even though I'd known this was coming, I suddenly felt like it was all brand new. Like the diagnosis and treatments and everything had just been some elaborate joke. My grandma was there, she was crying so hard, and my mom was hooked up to all these monitors. It was the first moment that I truly understood that I was going to lose her. Tears were running down her face, but she didn't bother to wipe them away. Wren slipped his hand onto her back. But do you know what I remember most about that night? I shook my head, not trusting my voice. You. Less than 10 minutes after I called you, you came running down the hall to her room. All the nurses were yelling at you to stop, but you didn't care. You just came running straight up to me, and you'd left your house so fast you hadn't even put on your shoes. She paused, her eyes glittering. That's what I'll always remember. You running barefoot down the hall, the nurses yelling as they chased after you. That's who you really are, and I'll never forget that when I needed you the most, you literally didn't wait a single second. You just showed up. She stepped forward, placing the rock at the base of the stump. All hail Queen Maeve, my best and fastest friend. We were both crying, tears washing down our cheeks. I'd never considered that that terrible night could hold something other than just pain. Something that Lena would carry with her as a comfort.
Me next.
Wren picked up a rock and stepped forward, squeezing Lena's shoulder.
Has everyone tried starbursts?
The abrupt shift in subject made me laugh. There was some general nodding, most of it from outside our circle, and I kept my eyes on Wren, trying not to notice that the crowd was now 3 people deep.
Lena had once confided in me that Ren had the kind of looks that grew on you. The longer you knew him, the cuter he got. I suddenly saw exactly what she meant. He continued.
Well, I love Starbursts. Whenever I'm in the States, I eat them non-stop. And you know how there's a social order to them? Like, you dump out a bag, and you eat all the pinks first, and then the reds and oranges, leaving the yellows for when you're really desperate.
Where was he going with this? I glanced at Lena, but she just smiled.
Anyway, the point is, Addie, you're a pink. Everyone knows you're a pink. Actually, scratch that. You're next level. You're that limited edition kind that had all pinks. And I know that because when Lena needed you, you were there.
He set his rock down.
All hail Queen Maeve, the pinkest of pink starbursts.
Thanks, Ren, I whispered. My body didn't seem to know how to handle what was happening. Laugh? Cry? Enjoy? I was going to go with enjoy.
Next, Rowan stepped forward, his rock resting by his side. The stump made us almost eye level, but he didn't meet my gaze, and his nervousness wafted onto me. My heart began pounding even harder. He exhaled.
Okay, Pink Starburst is always tough to follow, but here goes.
He rocked anxiously on his feet, a move that looked Ian-inspired. 3 days ago, I was sitting in my broken-down, crappy car when I saw this girl tackle her brother in a parking lot. I thought she was surprising and different, so I talked her brother into letting her come with us, which ended up completely ruining her plans. He looked up guiltily, shuffling his feet. But then, the next 3 days were incredible, because I found out she was more than just feisty. She was smart and loyal, and completely incapable of dressing weather appropriate. And we talked about things I'd never talked about with anyone. And even when our car flooded and we got chased by guard dogs, I just kept thinking, I wish this week would never end.
He lifted his chin, looking me straight in the eye.
And I wanted to tell you that you don't need that guy back home. You don't need anyone, unless you want them. You're enough all on your own. You're more than enough. You're Maeve.
A warm, peaceful feeling settled on my shoulders, light as a second shawl. This was the thing that I'd lost track of this summer. That being chosen or not chosen was not the thing that made me valuable. I was valuable regardless. I was enough, all on my own. I wanted to climb down and rest my head on his shoulder, but instead I just ducked my head.
Thank you, Rowan, I whispered.
You're welcome.
All hail Queen Maeve!
He bent to lower the rock, softening his voice so only I could hear.
I wish I didn't have to say goodbye to you tomorrow.
Me neither, I whispered back.
Lena met my eye gleefully over the top of Rowan's head, unable to contain her smile. I smiled back. Rowan returned to his place and Ian stepped forward, holding up his candle to his open notebook, a string of words marching across the page.
He'd prepared something.
I straightened up. You know that question Mr. Hummel likes to ask at the beginning of the semester? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound?
I nodded. It was one of those problems designed to make your brain run in circles.
His candle bobbed. Well, the first time I heard that question, it made me think of you. Because my whole life it's felt like unless you were there, helping me blow out my birthday candles, cheering me on in the stands, out on our field trips, whatever I did didn't actually matter. That it didn't count. You're the only person who knows my whole life, who's been there with me through everything, which makes you my life's witness.
He lowered his notebook to his side.
So what's the answer? If a tree falls in a forest and your little sister isn't there to hear it, did it make a sound? I'm not really sure. I'm just glad we're in the same forest.
He set his rock down, then stepped back with the others.
All hail Queen Maeve, my best and oldest friend.
Tears puddled under my chin, and I stood looking at Ian, his eyes forming a shiny mirror, reflecting all the things he saw in me. Then one more voice chimed in, this one in my mind.
What about you, Buttercup? What do you see in yourself?
I looked hard. I saw a lot of things. Bravery, compassion, perseverance, insecurity, even fear. But rising out of all of it, I saw Maeve. Her hair shone, and she held a shield, her throne solid behind her. And suddenly it was me on the throne, my robe thick and soft around me. The upcoming year was going to be hard, no doubt about it. And maybe even the year after it. But I was strong enough, and brave enough. I was Maeve, and I was going to make it. I jumped off the stump and let my friends encircle me in a warm, tight cocoon. Everyone who wasn't already on the lawn in front of Title Track stage was headed there, streaming from every possible crevice. It wasn't just our main event. It was everyone's main event. A muffled faraway noise sounded over a loudspeaker, instigating a dull roar from the crowd and making us all quicken our pace. Ian bounded ahead, his toga trailing in the mud. None of us had bothered to change out of our ceremonial garb. There wasn't time. It actually made us fit in more with the rest of the festival goers.
"I'm going to find us a spot."
Ian disappeared into the crowd. "I hope we can find him when we get there." I held tightly to Rowan's hand, partially to keep us from getting separated, and partially because once the group hug had ended, it had just happened. I couldn't get over the way our hands fit together, like they'd been sitting on opposite ends of the globe just waiting for the chance to meet. The crowd was turning brutal, bordering on absurd. We'd just survived a near collision with a man on a bike wearing a peacock costume when a high-pitched choking noise that sounded vaguely like, "Oh no," erupted from behind me.
"Lena, what's wrong?" Ren asked.
"Addie."
Lena put her hand on my back, her voice still choked. I turned to meet her wide eyes, but instead got snagged on something, moving rocket fast toward me through the crowd.
Was that?
It was. The rocket was my mother.
"Oh no," I choked, echoing Lena.
"Run,"
my brain advised, but even in my panic state I knew that was a terrible idea. Running would just mean pursuit. My mom was next to me in a matter of milliseconds.
"Hello, Addison? Lena?"
Her pitch had reached new and terrifying depths.
"You'd better start talking. Fast."
"How did you find us?"
I stammered. The answer to my question appeared to her left. Walter, swiftly followed by Archie, who held a massive bag of cotton candy.
"Walter, you told her?"
I yelled.
He held his hands up in protest.
"It wasn't me, it was Archie. He got the secret out of me and then he told Mom."
"Hey!"
Archie tried to hit Walter in the face with his cotton candy, but my mom grabbed it mid-swing.
"Don't blame it on me."
"No more talking."
Mom turned back to me, her face set in a hard stare. Not many people knew this, but back in her college days, she'd been one of the top roller derby contenders in the state. It was times like this that I knew exactly why she'd skated under the name Medusa Damage.
"Addison, you are supposed to be in Italy.
Italy!"
While I fumbled for an answer, she turned to Lena.
"Does Howard know you're here?"
"Rowan, go warn Ian,"
I whispered, taking advantage of the momentary distraction. He nodded and then sprinted into the crowd, no doubt thrilled to escape Medusa. Lena nodded, her head bobbing one too many times.
"Nice to see you, Mrs. Bennett, and yes, he does know. He booked my ticket."
She shoved Ren forward a few unwilling inches.
This is my boyfriend, Ren.
Hello there, Ren managed. Really great to meet you.
He withered under her gaze, and I jumped to the rescue. Mom, I can explain. This concert is really important to Ian.
She lifted her hand angrily, silencing me.
Where is Ian?
Now what? The last thing I wanted to do was unleash Mom on Ian. What if she didn't let him see the concert?
I'm not really sure.
Boys?
My mom snapped her fingers, and Archie and Walt jumped to attention.
You two are the tallest people in this crowd. Find him.
Walt stood on his tiptoes, craning his neck over the crowd, and Archie ran over to a music speaker and began climbing.
Yeah, I don't think that's allowed,
Lena said, just as a security guard made a beeline for him.
Man bun in a white toga, straight ahead,
Archie shouted as the security guard dragged him back to ground level.
Why are you guys wearing togas anyway? Walter asked.
Suddenly a loud cheer erupted in the distance, followed by a jangling strain of music. My heart somersaulted. Mom, the concert is starting. I don't have time to explain why, but this is the most important thing that has ever happened to Ian. You have to let him see it.
My intensity caught even me off guard.
Katerina would be proud. Rule number 4, be passionate. No one can argue with passion. My mom stepped back slightly, her perfectly shaped eyebrows lifting.
Sounds like you two are getting along again.
I nodded. Better than ever.
She hesitated, then gestured to Archie and Walter. Everyone, follow me.
Needless to say, we all complied. Even though Rowan had provided him with a few minutes of warning, the sight of our approaching mother drained all the blood from Ian's face.
Mom, he choked.
It was the only way either of us could seem to greet her.
Ian, she said coolly, there are a lot of things I want to say to you right now. But your sister claims that this is the most important thing in the world to you. So I'm giving you tonight.
She pointed one finger at his chest.
But after the concert, you will both undergo extensive questioning and will most likely be grounded for the rest of your lives. Understood?
Understood.
Thank you, ma'am,
Ian said, shooting me a grateful look.
In our family, ma'am was code for, I know you're going to pummel me into a fine pulp, and I respect you for that.
My mom nodded approvingly.
Rowan stepped forward, wringing his hands nervously.
Mrs. Bennett, I'm Rowan. Nice to meet you.
She tilted her head.
Ah, the Irish tutor.
He's my friend, Ian said.
And mine, I added.
So then tell me, friend Rowan, why are we standing here when Title Track is about to perform on stage, all the way up there?
She lifted her chin toward the front of the writhing mass of bodies.
How are we even going to see?
That is a problem, Rowan said. We probably should have arrived a lot earlier, like yesterday.
Ian bit his lower lip, his face clouding, and defiance rose in me.
Oh no, I had not been through everything I'd been through just to stand at the back of a concert, watching my brother crumple into a ball of disappointment.
But before I could come up with a solution, my mom clapped her hands together.
All right, people, form a chain. We're going in.
Going in where? Ian asked. Those people look like they've been here all week.
Ian, don't argue with me. For all you know, this is your last living act, so you might as well enjoy it.
A glimmer sparkled in her eye as she surveyed the crowd. And suddenly I remembered the stash of vintage records she'd kept in the attic for as long as I could remember. The proverbial apple had not fallen far from the tree.
Do I need to speak louder? She asked when none of us moved. Form a chain.
All the non-Bennets went wide-eyed with disbelief as we obediently grabbed one another's hands.
Ready?
Mom turned resolutely to the wall of people in front of her, Medusa damage revealing herself in all her terrifying splendor.
Coming through!
Hey, watch it!
A guy in a blue hat yelled at her as she jammed her elbow into him.
No, you watch it, she snapped. I'm about to ground these children for the rest of their underage lives because of this concert. The least they can do is enjoy it.
Damn, Blue Hat's friend said. Carry on.
Has anyone ever told you that you're your mother? Rowan whispered, his hand tight in mine. I don't know who's scarier, Maeve or Mother of Maeve.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, I whispered back.
It took us nearly the entire opening act, but my mother and her elbows managed to get us near the front, even clearing out a small pocket of space for us to stand all together. Once she stopped assaulting them, people sealed in, cinching us tightly together.
Mom, that was amazing, Ian said, his face rapturous. Thank you.
I'm not saying you're welcome because that would sound like I'm condoning this, she snapped. But the glint was still in her eye. I did my best to settle into the crowd. My entire body felt bruised and sticky from colliding with so many title track fans. Everyone was sweating. The temperature inside the crowd was at least 10 degrees higher than on the outskirts. Laser lights spilled over the stage, bathing us in bright red, and then four silhouettes appeared on stage as if by magic.
That's them! Ian shouted, grabbing my arm as tightly as a tourniquet. Rowan, Addie, that's them!
Ian, ease up! I yelled.
But my voice got sucked up into the vortex of screaming. The first chord started up, and I recognized the song immediately. Classic. The one that had been made into a music video at the Burren. At first, Ian looked too stunned to react, and then, instead of smiling, a large tear zigzagged down his red-lit cheek.
What's wrong? I shouted.
He squeezed my arm again, his fingernails forming half-moons in my skin. We're here, he said simply. The rest of the band joined in with the song, filling my ears and anchoring me to Ian and this moment. And suddenly I was thinking about a different aspect of my future. In 1 year, my big brother would leave for college, and we'd be separated for the first time. What would life be like without Ian by my side? I tried to picture it, but the only thing that sprang to mind was the road we'd followed to Electric Picnic, Ian singing along to title track. Ireland, green and mysterious outside our windows. The only thing I really knew was what I had to do next. Before I could lose my moment of certainty, I reached across Ian, tugging gently at my mom's sleeve.
Mom, after the concert is over, I need to tell you something. Something important.
She swiveled her gaze from the stage just as Ian reached down to squeeze my hand. The road narrowed, and then got wider, then disappeared into the distance, too far for me to see what was ahead, and I just let it.
Love and Luck.
You've come a long way, Pet,
pettest of pets. You can't imagine the pride that's swelling up in my considerable bosom right at this moment, to know that you have not only explored the Emerald Isle, but your broken heart is now mended. You are completely better. Over the moon, one door closes, 10 more open, beauty in the pain better.
Right? Right?
Let's cut the crap, Pet, because now that we're reaching the end of our time together, I feel it's time for me to come clean. I don't want that heart of yours to mend, and I never did.
What? Was she actually evil this whole time?
No, Pet. Heavens, no. Stick with me for a moment. Do you know what I love most about humans, Pet? It's our utter dogged stupidity. When it comes to love, we never learn. Ever. Even when we know the risks. Even when it makes much more sense to relocate to individualized climate-controlled caves, where our hearts have at least a fighting chance at remaining intact. We know the risks of opening our hearts up. And yet we keep doing it anyway. We keep falling in love and having babies and buying shoes that look incredible but feel like death. We keep adopting puppies and making friends and buying white sofas that we know we're going to drop a slice of pizza face down on. We just keep doing it. Is it ignorance? Amnesia? Or is it something else? Something braver? You opened this book because your heart was broken and you wanted it fixed. But that was never the cosmic plan. Hell, it was never my plan. Hearts break open until they stay open. It's what they were made to do. The pain? It's part of the deal. A small exchange for the wild, joyful mess you'll be handed in return. I hate goodbyes. So instead, allow me to hand you one last thought. A small Irish charm to clip to your charm bracelet. Did you know that each leaf on a clover stands for something? They do, pet. Faith, hope, and love. And should you happen to find one with four leaves? Well, that's the one that stands for luck. So, my love, I wish you all those things. Faith, hope, love, and luck. But mostly, I wish you love. It's its own form of luck. Excerpt from Ireland for the Heartbroken, An Unconventional Guide to the Emerald Isle, 3rd Edition. Epilogue. Ian pulled smoothly into a parking spot, turning off the ignition but leaving the music on. It was title track, of course. Ever since we'd gotten home, we'd been playing it nonstop. The songs overlapping in the hallway between our bedrooms, sometimes competing, sometimes meshing together. It had made a hard week a lot more bearable. There had been a lot of upset. I'd wanted everything out in the open, so as soon as everyone was reunited, I'd called for a family meeting where I laid it all out. My brothers had to be forcibly held back from storming Cubby's house, and my dad was silent and teary for a terrible 10 minutes. But they'd all stood by me. And one glimmer of benefit. My news had paved the way for Ian's. His quitting football was just a firework next to my atomic bomb. I flipped down the visor to check out the dark rings under my eyes. Jet lag combined with nerves had made for a lot of sleepless nights. Last night I'd ended up calling Rowan and staying on the phone until 2 a.m. watching a terrible movie he'd found on YouTube about a Celtic warrior princess named Maeve, who slashed everyone who got in her way. I think he was trying to pump me up. Ian lowered the volume. So, Christmas, huh? My cheeks warmed. I swear he could read my thoughts sometimes. What about it? A certain Irishman told me that there are only 68 days until his Christmas break starts. We're good friends and all, but that countdown has nothing to do with me. It's about you. Stop. Now. Just like I'd thought, once the situation had been ironed out, my mom and Rowan had bonded almost instantaneously. And now he was coming to visit. Every time I thought about seeing him again, a small, careful butterfly fluttered its wings in the center of my chest. We looked out the windshield, neither of us in a hurry to leave the car. Was it just me or had the student body magically tripled? For a second, my vision tilted. How many of them know about my photo? Probably a lot of them.
Maeve, you ready?
Ian finally asked, the sound of his drumming fingers breaking through my thoughts. Yes, I said, sounding surer than I felt. Act in control.
Don't worry, Addie. I'm here for you, he said like he hadn't heard me. I'm going to walk you to all your classes. I already checked your schedule. My homeroom is in B Hall and yours is in C, so meet me at the front office. And if anyone says anything to you, you tell them, Ian, I've got this. I said more forcefully. We just survived a road trip across Ireland in a broken-down car. I think I can handle walking into high school.
Okay. Ian went back to drumming, his eyes serious.
I know you've got this, but if there's ever a moment when you don't, you've got me. And it doesn't matter what anyone else says. You're Maeve. I'm Maeve, I repeated, allowing the nervousness in his voice to extinguish mine. Was it possible that he was more worried for me than I was worried for me? I leaned on that feeling. Outside, we pulled on our backpacks. Mine was extra heavy, because along with my textbooks, it had rocks in it. 4 of them, to be exact. It had been a last-minute call, but I liked the way their weight pressed into my shoulders, grounding my feet into my sneakers into the ground. Plus, TSA had had a complete fit about my traveling with them. I might as well put them to use. We started across the parking lot, Ian sweeping the crowd anxiously. Ian, relax. I broke into a jog and fell into step beside him.
I'm completely relaxed, he protested.
But a clump of hair found its way into his mouth. That habit, unfortunately, looked like it was here to stay. We reached the bank of doors and he stopped, ignoring the crush of students as he rocked nervously onto his heels.
Ready, Maeve?
It was a good question. Was I ready? This summer had shown me that I was a lot of things. I was messy, impulsive, occasionally insecure, and sometimes I did things that I regretted. Things I couldn't undo. Like not listening to my brother. Or handing my heart over to someone who couldn't be trusted with it. But despite all those things, no, alongside all those things, I was Maeve. Which meant that regardless of how ready I did or did not feel, I was going in anyway. This was my life, after all.
You'll do it, Buttercup.
You really will. I'm ready, I said firmly. I looked into Ian's blue eyes, gathering one last shot of courage. Then we grabbed the door handles and pushed in. Together.
Love and Luck was written by Jenna Evans Welch and read by Lisa Flanagan. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Love and Luck is available in print from Simon Pulse. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, Love and Gelato by Jenna Evans Welch, read by Rebecca Ross.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.